Okay, yell when you're ready. Good, camera, thank you. Okay.
I hope she stays that way.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to open the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection. It's Thursday, March the 10th, 2011. Welcome. For the people in the audience today, for your information, we're not going to be having a public hearing or work session on House Bill 2825. We need an amendment due to a drafting error, so that will not be heard this morning. And we're going to be jumping around a little bit because a lot of people up here are going to be testifying in other bills and on other in other committees on other bills. So with that, Chair Hobie, why don't you do the? We're going to start with the work session and referring those bills.
All right, that means you're ready to make the motions.
Yes, sir.
With that, I open our work session on House Bill 2351.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2351 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill will be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Representative Wisnett has moved House Bill 2351 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Discussion? Seeing none, shall we have a roll call vote?
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Excused.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
No.
Vice Chair Smith?
Excused.
Co-Chair Hobie?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
The bill, having received required votes, is passed.
Mr. Chair,
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2322.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Wisnett,
I move House Bill 2322 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Wisnett has moved House Bill 2322 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, this bill is going to where? Revenue before it goes to the floor?
That's called
Ways and Means.
Ways and Means before it goes to the floor?
Yes.
So we're just moving it to Ways and Means?
Correct. We're moving the bill. It actually has to go back to the desk, which is the reference to the floor. And we're not giving any recommendation. We haven't heard the bill. We're moving it to the next committee for consideration.
We have heard the bill, haven't we?
Yes.
Sure we did.
We did.
This bill, 2322, we had a prior public hearing on this?
We had a prior public hearing.
Okay, we did.
Session,
no work session.
No amendments.
So we're just not making a recommendation on it. That was...
I'll agree to move it to Ways and Means, but I don't support this concept. So.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Is there a does it make any sense at all to then consider a motion to move it to the other committee?
It's without recommendation.
I understand it's without recommendation, but I mean, I'd like to vote against it in this committee personally.
Certainly.
Go ahead.
We can do that if you want.
You can vote against it.
Yeah.
Vote against passing it.
Yeah. Certainly, that's your prerogative. Any other discussion?
I just, when we heard this bill, my only thoughts were it's setting a dangerous precedent for other agencies to come forward and approach the legislature. I will support moving it, but I'm with Representative Cameron. I have some grave concerns about what this will do for the future of any agency that comes before us to say we too want to be omitted from this process. So I'll let it go to Ways and Means. We'll see what they do with it, but I'm not supportive of the concept, but I'll assist in this process and help it get there.
Certainly appreciate it. Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think if we're a policy committee and the policy is bad, let's vote against it. That's what I feel.
I will do that if it gets to the House floor.
That's certainly everybody's prerogative. The issue that we faced is with this committee. We have a lot of bills, and we felt that this was a budgetary issue that would be better dealt with in the Committee on Joint Ways and Means. And Chair Wisnant and I both agreed to that, and certainly the members can vote against the motion. So with that, can I have a roll call vote?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Flynn.
Excused.
Representative Conger.
No.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Co-Chair Sheehan.
No.
Vice Chair Smith.
Excused.
Did she call Conger?
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye.
Ms. Conger's a no.
Co-Chair Wisnant.
Aye.
The motion not having received the required votes fails. Close the work session on House Bill 2322.
Who said no?
Did
you say no?
Yes, at five.
I will open a work session on House Bill 2566. Jan, would you give us a description?
This is another. Mr. Chair? In this one here?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2566 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Representative Wisnant moves House Bill 2566 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill will be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Jan, do you want to describe the bill so the members...
Mr. Chairs and members, House Bill 2566, it exempts from taxation any property owned, acquired, or possessed by Indian tribes in Oregon or by an entity owned by an Indian tribe in Oregon if the property is used for government services. It applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1st of 2011, and the committee has never heard this bill before.
Any other discussion?
Just to be clear, so we all understand, we're moving this bill to revenue.
Correct. The motion is, as I have described before, according to the rules, and it is a little cumbersome because it sounds like we're moving it to the floor,
right.
But it's got to go to the floor before it can go to revenue. So we're just moving it to the other committee for their consideration. Other discussion on this? Seeing none, can we have a roll call vote?
Representative Cameron.
Yes.
Representative
Flynn. Excused.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Excused.
Co-Chair Wisnant.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holmby.
Aye. House Bill 2566, having received the required votes, is passed. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2566. With that, I'll open a work session at
29, 24. We're going to do your public hearing.
Oh, we're done with that.
We'll do a backup for the public hearing. I'll open that, and then you can go here for the rest of the
okay.
Bill. Can I go? Yeah, they're going to come. They're going to call you.
We the work sessions.
Okay, we can do a public hearing and possible work session on this next bill.
I'll go over to revenue.
You'll be fine.
They're supposed to come get us, I think.
No, give me a second.
Okay, where are we on the chart?
29, 24.
At the bottom. Here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, time,
we're going to open a public hearing now on House Bill 2924. Committee members, Representative Hovey, is your bill, and Jan, will you give us a summary of this bill?
Mm-hmm. Chairs and committee members, House Bill 2924, it removes limitation on alcohol content, the minimum amount, the source and place of consumption for malt beverages sold by a brewery. It allows a brewery to sell malt beverages at retail at one location other than where the manufacturing occurs, and it allows a brewery to obtain a special events license.
Let me introduce myself for the record. I'm Paul Holvey, State Representative from District 8. And if I could, Mr. Chair, have Mr. Paul Romaine come up with me to help explain this bill. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Romaine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for allowing me this opportunity to speak to the committee on this issue. This issue is a fairly minor adjustment that I brought forward because of what appeared to be an inconsistency or maybe a matter of fairness for breweries as opposed to brew pubs and their ability to sell do dock sales of malt beverages. And so I'm trying to allow them to basically be on a level playing field for their dock sales. And with that, we're reducing the amount of, reducing the limit on what they can sell from 5 gallons to 4 gallons, which isn't a lot, but it makes a difference to a couple of breweries in the state. And also, we're reduce or taking away the limit of 8% because many of our breweries in the state of Oregon are selling ales that are actually around between 8% and 9%. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Romaine, and maybe you can make it a little more clear.
Okay, please identify. Welcome. Please identify yourself, Mr. Romaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or co-chair. I got to get used to it. I'm still not used to the co. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland. I represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. I've worked with Representative Holvey a little bit on this measure. The genesis of this, a little history. Oregon, being the progressive state that we are, back in 1985, actually made some decisions that proved to be really very much kind of ahead of its time. We traditionally, in alcohol distribution and production, there is a pretty strict line between production folks, wholesaling folks, and retailing folks. And what happened in 85 was we had a bunch of home brewers, if you would, who really wanted to get into the business of selling beer. Some restaurant folks wanted to produce their own beer. And they came to the legislature, and in most states, the wholesalers would end up fighting that. In our state, we actually embraced it and came up with the theory that we could set up two different licenses. One was to allow you to produce product and retail the product, and that's a brew pub. And the other one was the current brewery license, which allowed you to both wholesale and produce, but not retail. So you had to make a choice. And you still have to make that choice. You can either be in production and wholesaling or production and retailing. But part of the thing with production is the ability, you should have the ability to have people come in and taste your beer and actually sell it off that dock. And that's the thing that we have, we allow brewers to do, but we put a limit on it with the amount of alcohol that can be in that brew that you sell. In the days when all we had was pretty much the national brands and stuff, they were pretty, the higher-end beers were thought of as the malt liquors and things that people were consuming probably the way they shouldn't be consuming them. What happened was that our industry started producing some incredible product that was 6, 7, 8% alcohol by volume. It could be sold in a restaurant, could be delivered to the restaurant and sold to them, but it couldn't be sold off the dock. So what this bill does is recognize, we had bumped it, I think, from 6% to 8% a few years ago, but frankly, there is a at least one brewer, I know there's actually a bunch of brewers, but there's one in particular in the Eugene area who produces a product called Tricera Hops, and it's 8-point-something% alcohol. It's a very hoppy beer, and for those of us hopheads, we love it. But it's a product that technically that brewery can't sell to customers who come in. What this bill would do is allow them to sell beers that like that over their dock, as long as they're in quantities of more than 4 gallons. That's basically 2 cases. So it's basically allows you to sell a keg. One of the things that we're going to have to do, and it's going to be done in a different committee, is actually change the wholesaling law, because wholesalers are also stuck with this limit. So what we have is a situation where the brewery will be able to sell it, but the wholesaler who has their product in a different area will not be able to sell it off the dock. And we're going to bring to the floor, hopefully through another committee, a bill that will take care of that problem, because the relating to clause in this is not sufficiently broad enough. The Dash 1 amendments accomplished the two things that we're talking about. They basically lower the amount that can be sold off the dock from 5 gallons to 4 gallons, so you can sell, you have to sell at least 4 gallons, which is about 2 cases. And it takes off the cap on what can be sold as far as alcohol content. Now, malt beverages can only go up to 14% anyway, so there's a, by definition, a cap on it anyway. We commend it to you. The Oregon Micros are producing some incredible quality stuff that is not abused. I mean, you don't really see people out there going crazy on the stuff. We recommend the bill to you. The way it was originally drafted, somebody in legislative council kind of got on steroids and decided to take care of everything in the world that they thought was a problem, which wasn't. So we commend it to you with the Dash 1 amendments. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, committee members?
Straightforward.
Representative Conger?
So I have two quick questions, probably aimed at Mr. Romain. One is, obviously, I'm concerned about all the brewery jobs in Bend, what impact, and in my district, District 54, what impact does this have on brewery jobs?
Mr. Chair and Representative Conger, the only thing it could have is a positive impact. It will allow them to sell. If it's a brew pub, they can already sell pretty much everything. And I believe, I'm not sure of all the brewers in your area, but I think most of them are brew pubs. I know Deschutes is, and so this doesn't affect them. But if there is a brewer in your district, it would enable them to do more than they currently do.
Follow up? Please.
Second question is, when you say off the dock, what does that mean?
Mr. Chair and Representative Conger, the dock, well, it's, I'm sorry for using the terminology. Basically, the dock is where basically beer is shipped out of a warehouse. So if you go to a restaurant or a retail establishment, you're buying it at the retail establishment. If you go to a wholesaler or a brewery, they have a dock where they're shipping product out, and normally that's sold to another business, to a retailer or to a wholesaler if it's a brewery. The dock is a dock sale is a sale to the ultimate consumer that happens to be at the dock.
I see.
That's all.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Committee members? Would you address the Dash 1, in your testimony, you addressed that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the Dash 1 amendments are what I was testifying about. It
okay.
limits the bill to just those two items that really should present no problem.
Representative Sheehan?
Thank you, Mr. Romain. How many breweries don't have brew pubs that would be affected by this bill, roughly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sheehan, I don't know the exact number. There are far more brew pubs in the state than there are breweries. It's just a more flexible license. What happens is some people, like, I remember Widmer, others want to do their own wholesaling, and Ninkasi is one of them. They want to do their own wholesaling in a particular area. So you need a brewery license to do wholesaling. You can't do it with a brew pub license. So they applied for it. Eventually, what happens is you get to a certain size, wholesaling doesn't make sense for you anymore. You tend to, just the natural business thing is you need to give it to somebody else to do it. It's one of those functions you don't want to do. Happened with Widmer. And then you end up going to get a brew pub license, switch your license over to brew pub so you can do other things.
Chair Fall?
Yes, please.
Would this discourage a brewery from getting a brew pub license in any way?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sheehan, not in any way, shape, or form. This is, the brewers want this. The wholesalers are fine with it. It's not, the consumer will benefit from it. You'll be able to get things at different places. And an unnamed member of this committee will be able to get his Tricera hops.
Thank you, Mr. Romain. Committee members, okay? Okay, we'll... I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2924. We're going to open a work session to adopt the Dash 1. So we'll open the work session to adopt Dash 1.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2425.
excuse, 29-24.
Representative Hovey is dyslexic. Has moved to accept dash ones into House Bill 29-24. Discussion, committee members? Roll call, please.
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Excused.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye.
Co-Chair Wizard.
Aye. Okay, we've adopted the dash ones. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2924. And we plan to go to the passing some bills, but committee members are still going in and out. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3270. Jan, would you give us a brief...
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3270, it establishes a task force on the consolidation of state government boards and commissions. It directs the task force to study the functions and duties of state government boards and commissions and to make recommendations to consolidate the functions and improve the efficiencies and effectiveness. It allows the task force to pre-session file legislation. It allows a legislative administrator to hire staff to support the task force. And it sunsets the task force when the Legislative Assembly convenes for its regular session in 2012.
Thank you. Representative Colby, are you?
I believe we have Representative Doherty in the room that's going to be presenting this.
Good morning, Representative. Do you want to come up and introduce yourself? And we're ready for you. How was that for timing?
Oh, my timing was perfect.
Good morning. Please introduce yourself and give us your testimony.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Wisnett, Margaret Doherty. I'm the representative from House District 35 in Greater Tigard. And thank you, committee members, for hearing me this morning. This morning I'm talking about House Bill 3270. And with 3270, it establishes a task force on the consolidation of state government boards and commissions. And it will direct the task force to study functions and duties of state government boards and commissions and make recommendations on consolidations to improve efficiencies in the system. The idea for this had been floating around for a while, and so we decided to bring it to you as a bill this session. As I said before, House Bill 3270 sets up a task force on consolidation of state boards. The bill itself sets up a framework for the committee. It sets up duties. It sets up timelines. And it also talks about how all agencies will cooperate. One other part of the bill, realizing the fiscal constraints that we have this year, is that when it comes to staffing of this, the legislative administrator may employ persons, but the task force shall use the services of continuing legislative staff without employing additional persons to the greatest extent practical. I think it's very important to look at some of these boards and commissions. There's well over 170 boards and commissions that operate in Oregon today. And I think the question is do we really need to have all of these? How much is overlap? How much is duplication? And maybe how many of the commissions and boards maybe have outlived their purpose when they were first established? We know that every group has ownership and pride in their committees, and we respect that. But I think the time has also come that we may need to go through and look at these to see if they're no longer applicable to their initial charge. So that's House Bill 3270, and I'm open for questions.
Questions? Representative Conger.
Representative Doherty, thank you for bringing this bill and for testifying. And real quick, I just first of all, I support the intent of the bill. I certainly think that it would be prudent to work on reducing the number of boards, commissions, task forces, and everything that we have in the state. The only question I had is staffing. How would this task force be staffed? When would it end? What is the cost or additional cost related to it, if any?
Well, Well, we don't have a fiscal on this, right? I don't believe we have a fiscal on this. But it was specifically written in here. First of all, the timeline is they go through and they say what the task of it, and the task force shall report the legislative assembly at any time within 30 days after its final meeting or at such time that the president or speaker may designate. And so it's what we're looking at is the idea that next session or earlier, and possibly earlier, since this is something that will take effect immediately, that we can get it done pretty quickly. The second thing when it comes to money is that Section 12 of this mentions that the legislative administrator may employ persons necessary for the performance of this task force. But we go through and continue that, and it said the purpose of this is they shall use existing continuing legislative staff. So the purpose of this was to use continuing legislative staff, again, adding possibly another duty that they would do to go through. And what we're looking at this is more the communication of and the reporting of the final task force. So I really can't see that it would be a tremendous time commitment on the part of one of our very hardworking employees.
Thank you.
Questions?
Representative Clem.
Thank you. So, you know, I like you a lot. We're good friends, but I'm not that interested so far in this bill until I hear what ones do you have in mind? What are you thinking of? You know, I was on one for 6 years.
Yeah.
We all volunteered our time. There was no expense to the state. Mm-hmm. It cost most of us a lot of time, energy, and money, but we love doing it because we're helping college students in that case. And most boards and commissions are volunteers who are a huge part of the governance of this state, I think, and help bring governance to the citizens. So give me some examples of what you're thinking of.
I'll give you some examples of what we're thinking of, because here we've got, if I may show this, there are 6 pages of boards that we have. And some of the boards are... And I'm not making judgments on what the duties and the jobs that they have, but some of the boards are real regional. In other words, there's a Umatilla Depot Citizens Advisory Committee. Now, is that something that we need on a statewide level, realizing what the Umatilla Depot contains? But is that something that is we still need an advisory committee on? There's one called the South Slough Estuary Research Reserve Management Commission. And I'm not quite sure if that's one that we still need. Do we need a commission on hearing aids? And it's not that I'm prejudiced because I wear hearing aids. There are 3 councils that deal with juvenile justice. Do we have to have 3 councils, or can we merge them all into one? I don't have a tattoo, but we have a commission. No, I have no tattoos. But we have a commission on electrology, permanent hair technicians, and tattoo artists. Is that something that still is relevant today, and do we still need to do that since this those industries and those businesses are all set up? And so those are the kind of things that we're looking at as to whether we need them and whether they're more regionalized and can be taken over by the regional areas if they so choose, or whether it is something that is truly a whole state commission. Now, there are many of them. I mean, you've got Fish and Wildlife Commission, you've got the Arts Commission, you've got a lot of those that are in cover large constituencies and large departments for advisory, but we're looking at, but until we really look at these all over 170 boards, do we really need to have them?
Other questions?
Yes, Bella. Just a follow-up, and again, it's getting close to St. Patrick's Day. You're Irish. I'm hoping you'll invite me out for a drink or something, but in ways and means, that's what we do in these hearings on these commissions, is we look at their budgets and we see if they're useful. I mean, that tattoo one, it's self-funded, and it's to have people who don't know what they're doing not be allowed to just start marking up people's bodies, and it's an industry regulation. It's a regulatory body for the industry by and of themselves. Well, I won't get into all of them. Anyway, I'm not sure about the task force I forget the acronym or the name, but I'm just not sure that
the SSERRM.
I'm not sure it's not duplicative of what already happens in the Ways and Means process, and or members dropping bills like abolish the Student Assistance Commission, which is a terrible idea, by the way, but somebody's got a bill on that topic. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, I'm a little uptight about that particular one, and you're catching my flack
from
it. But That's all. That's, isn't that right? I think I'm supposed to say at the end of it to turn it into a question.
Representative, you want to comment? Or
was that, was that a question? Or?
No, no. It's a rant, I think they call it.
That's okay.
Representative Sheehan, you had a question?
Representative Doherty, I echo what both of the representatives have said so far. Mm-hmm. Could this be handled inside the Legislative Audits Committee? Because it seems like we already have a committee that's supposed to do this.
Yeah. I don't know. And then I'll tell you the reason is the Audits Committee is a new committee, and I'm not quite sure what their function is and whether they go through and actually do this sort of thing themselves, which this committee would have three, you know, appointed, or whether they farm it out or whatever. So I can't answer the question because I'm not quite sure what the function and how they function in their own committees.
Chair Hobie. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I'm, of course, also sponsoring this bill, and I'd like to, you know, make my little statement as well on this. I think that this is a good bill, and the information that the Audits Committee may or may not have on any particular boards is certainly relevant. The information that goes to Ways and Means on these boards and commissions as they review them individually is also important. But I think that this concept is, as far as having a group of legislators specifically look at all the different boards and commissions and seeing if we can work towards some efficiency, some consolidation, and maybe there is nothing at the end of the day, but I think there's a great opportunity with so many boards and commissions to actually come up with some efficiencies. And you know, I think that's the genesis of this bill, that even after the our last governor made recommendations, the Governor Reset Committee looked at this and said that they thought there was potential for us to examine this more closely. And examining this more closely is more of an interim project that needs to be taken up that doesn't normally have time to happen in the Ways and Means process. From my discussions with many of the Ways and Means people, they are looking at the individual board or commission and not really looking at the whole scope of all the different ones and looking where we might line up with some efficiencies by reducing the amount of overlap, especially. So I think there is potential to this, and this task force will be made up of some legislators. From both sides of this building, I think it's a good concept and a worthwhile exercise for us to review it, to try to make our government a little bit more efficient, perhaps. And I think that would be a good exercise for us to take a look, to take on, because we are here with a lot of constraints, and anything we can do to save a couple bucks here and there and make a government more efficient, I think is a good option. So I thank Representative Doherty for trying to push on this a little bit, because I think it's something we should seriously consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hobie, and thank you, Representative Doherty, for bringing this forth.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, members, no other questions. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3270. We'll open a hearing on public hearing on House Bill 3932. Jan, would please give the committee a summary.
2932.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairs and committee members, House Bill 2932, it establishes regular office hours of all state agencies to be 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Thursday, excluding state agencies that provide essential services. It requires the Department of Administrative Services to develop and implement a plan for each state agency and to adopt rules for the implementation of the plans. It requires staff to report twice a year to the Legislative Assembly on the results of the four-day work week.
Thank you. Representative Hovey, do you want to have someone join you? Want to go call Thatcher?
I don't know that anyone's going to join me on.
Representative that. Thatcher was down, and she'll we'll call her to be sure she comes back. Thank you, Representative. Would you remember, if we forget, please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Paul Holby, State Representative, District 8. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the four-day work week. I think it is something, another thing that the state should be looking at. albeit there's a lot of difference of opinion. There's a lot of different results from studies and a lot of different ideas about this bill and about this concept in general. But the real point of this bill is to really look at some alternative ways of doing business as state government, and going to having some of our agencies look at going to a 410 schedule has some pros to it and perhaps has some cons, but I think it's a concept that another concept that the state should really take a close look at. And this bill, though, may need some amendments. I think the idea behind this is can we find efficiencies? Can we find ways to save money? And can we save energy? Can we reduce the carbon footprint of by going to a 410 schedule? I think there's a lot of potential with this concept. Some of the pros could be that the state agencies are open longer hours, so people that are working may have opportunity to actually get some business done with the state if it stayed open a little bit later in the day. That's sort of the genesis of this concept, and I think it is worth our consideration, and seeing if we can come up with a plan for some of our employees to go to this type of schedule if, in fact, it will produce some cost savings.
Thank you. If you'll remain at the table, Representative Thatcher, thanks for joining us, and could you please identify yourself and give us your testimony?
Thank you. I'm Kim Thatcher, State Representative from Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburg, and sorry I missed the front part of this, so I didn't get to hear everything that Representative Holvey said, but as many of you know, I've been working on some government efficiency and accountability measures over the years, and last session I had an almost identical bill, so it was really cool that Representative Holvey was introducing it this year. At the time when I first introduced it last session, I was intrigued by what Utah was doing and that they were talking about saving millions of dollars. And since that time, they've studied it. They are saving money, not as much as they had originally anticipated, but they are still saving money. And there is it's showing reductions in maintenance costs and employee overtime. In fact, there's a study by Brigham Young University that showed 3/4 of the employees liked the new schedule. There are fewer sick days, reduced overtime costs, and, of course, the savings on energy, like was mentioned. So it was pretty interesting, the effect it had on the employees of the state. The morale shot up, and conflicts between work and family commitments were reduced. But I know that we're here at the state level to serve the citizens, not just to make employees happy. However, that was a nice, unexpected benefit. And I think that we can serve the people of the state by extending the hours and making it make sense. I believe the bill says Monday through Thursday or something like that. However, I think we need to make the hours make sense and the days off make sense, and the actual agencies that are a part of this need to make sense too. It wouldn't make sense for all of them. I know that in Clackamas County, they've estimated a $70,000 a year cost savings. They went to a 4-day work week a couple years ago. City of Portland's talking about it. They're estimating around $400,000 a year savings. School districts perhaps have the most experience with this type of calendar, and there are more than 100 school districts in 18 states using this system, and there are 25 of them in here in Oregon.
You can give us a letter.
We talked about the savings on overhead costs and utility bills. I agree with Representative Holvey that this is going to be an interesting discussion. I think there are many positives to it. And I think we need to examine perhaps the negative sides of it. I'm sure you'll be hearing from some of those folks shortly. But I think this is a good option for cutting costs without cutting staff and service.
Thank you very much. Committee members, questions for these colleagues?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Just a couple quick questions. Don't take this as me challenging either one of you. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I'm just kind of curious. Wages, hours, and working conditions are part of the collective bargaining agreement. So has that been taken into consideration? That would be question one. The other thing is this is this geared toward customer service or towards cost savings or both? And the reason I ask that is City Gresham went to 410s for several employees, but they actually augment the schedule Monday through Thursday in one case, and so some folks get Friday off and other folks work Tuesday through Friday. So they're open 5 days a week. If it's customer service and serving our citizens, I would guess there's a fair number that would like to do business on Saturday. But we don't do that. So I'm just kind of curious what the thoughts would be on that. And I do appreciate that there's amendments needed because in the bill it specifically states shall develop and implement the plan. And I would like to see us study this issue and the impact before we move forward with a bill that says we shall do this. Those are my thoughts, and if you'd like to respond, I'd sure like to give you the opportunity.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Matthews, Mr. Chair, and committee. You're absolutely correct. The shall implement. You know, we really are looking at having a look at this and studying this a little bit, seeing where it makes sense, looking at the pros and cons of it, seeing if in fact there are problems, whether or not we would be able to mitigate them for particular agencies. Obviously, it's not going to work for all agencies, and yes, in fact, we did think about a staggered workforce. Maybe, you know, one group could work Monday through Thursday, another group for Tuesday through Friday. I think those things are all open to discussion on this. And as far as I think another part of your question was about the collective bargaining and how that plays out. Certainly we're cognizant that we can't go in and change the collective bargaining, but I have mentioned this to some of the union folks, and they're very willing to talk about this as well. So I think we're at the early stages of discussing many efficiency issues in this state, and I think it's prudent of us to try to turn over some of these stones to see if there really is some savings. Certainly, Utah's experience didn't produce quite what they wanted according to their audit, but certainly the testimony hopefully we'll have, and I think you may have a letter from Clackamas County showed some real success. So I think we need to look at what things could be successful in this sort of concept and study those. And if we're able to have some confidence that it could be successful, I think moving part of our government to this type of schedule may actually be beneficial. And just the idea that somebody would be commuting 4 days a week instead of 5 days a week, you know, that has some other benefits that maybe not directly to the state, but certainly to the employee. The cost of commuting 1 day a week less. Also would have a benefit in our carbon footprint. So there's a lot of pieces to this puzzle, certainly, and I just, it's another one of those things. I think it's time for the state of Oregon to start thinking a little more creatively, and I appreciate Representative Thatcher's interest in this, and I join her in thinking that, you know, we need to start thinking outside the box.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
I just wonder if you've considered that for the legislature. You know, maybe we go to 410s instead.
No.
and then lastly, I would say, having been on a 410 and a 5-9, which was every other weekend was a 3-day weekend, it was a great schedule. And folks tend to like that. In fact, some of our folks in the fire service that work the Monday through Friday schedule instead of the 24-48, they like having that 3-day weekend. So I don't doubt that most employees, and I'm sure that there's some that we'll hear from that don't want it, but I don't doubt that most employees like this schedule. I don't doubt that at all. And I appreciate, again, for both of you kind of partnering on this to bring it forward.
Well, I just want to add, too, that we do have service on Saturday at many DMV offices. We have tried to accommodate service in that respect, and I think that we can continue that type of service when it makes sense for agencies to be open on different days of the week. So.
And to Mr. Chair and Representative Wisner or Representative Matthews, excuse me, we recognize that some employees may not like this so much, but the surveys really do show that majority of employees would favor this kind of a schedule, and actually there's been some studies on their productivity as well. Less time loss has been one thing that's been noted as well. So there are some a lot of things to look at, and of course, every survey and every study on this issue
you know, is not always consistent. But I think if we take a close look at it, maybe we can find something.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Holvey, you just mentioned surveys, and the bill says that we need to develop and implement this. Were surveys done or any sort of task force created to arrive at the conclusion that the state needs to follow this sort of model? I know Clackamas County did some extensive surveying. Are those the surveys you're referring to, or was there anything specific to the state?
I don't know that we have anything in state that's actually studied this at this point. And as we mentioned, we are considering amendments on this so that we're not moving forward with implementing this right off the bat without having, you know, a closer examination of it. It was simply, you know, this is the original draft. We have amendments, and we're going to continue to work to see if we can put together something that makes a little more sense for us to just move this direction. And that's where we're going. We don't want to, you know, jump into this and implement this next week, you know, so people know. I don't think that would be prudent. We really do want to make sure that we take a close look at it, find out what the pros and cons are, and try to mitigate those cons and see if we can come up with a scenario that works. And that was one of the reasons for this public hearing, was to reveal some of the pros and cons.
Yeah.
And I think we can draw upon the experience of the many agencies and school districts around the country and within the state that have gone to this. And we can study that and look at and see where it makes sense.
All right. Thank you for the clarification. Question. Representative Conger.
Thank you. It's really not a question. I just want to make a comment about just emphasizing a couple of points that you've raised about productivity, really. I think, I'm not sure because I have no particular background in it, but I suspect that businesses, privates, well, I should say, I have data showing that private sector companies are very careful to look at productivity and analyze it in create a variety of ways and incentives for employees to have a better work environment, to be compensated for productivity, all aimed at making the employees happier, because when they're happier, they are more productive. And there's a lot of things that we're confronting, particularly right now in the legislature, that would give public employees a variety of reasons not to be happy and maybe to be less productive. And so I just appreciate, you know, this is not only a potential cost saver, but it has a lot of intangible benefits potentially. So I think it's a creative idea. It's a good idea. And I appreciate you bringing the bill forward and testifying today. Thank you.
Any more questions? All right. Thank you, representatives. Let's bring up Steve Wheeler and Karen Pearson from Clackamas County.
Nice work, Chairman.
Thank you.
I move we keep you at the gavel.
Totally out of order. Good morning. Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, I have some brief remarks I'll read into the record and then be ready for questions. Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnett, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear today. I'm Steve Wheeler, Clackamas County Administrator. With me on my right is Karen Pearson, Human Resources Program Coordinator. And I'd also like to recognize Troy Rayburn, the Clackamas County Government Affairs Manager, who is also in the audience. Troy. He's a good point of contact if you have additional questions after today, as he is in the Salem area and this building regularly. We have previously submitted a letter dated March 8, 2011, to the committee. Let me begin by making some brief comments that will add some context to the four-day work week and also add a few additional insights learned from our county experience. The backdrop for our November 1, 2008 trial implementation of a four-day work week were the extremely high fuel prices in the summer of 2008. They were impacting county fleet costs, employee commutes, and also the county's interest in lowering both operating costs and our carbon footprint. We evaluated implementing the four-day work week of 10-hour days in three stages to see if it was a good fit. First, could it work for the public and our clients that we serve? If it couldn't work for them, no need to go forward. We evaluated this through before and after telephone surveys, August 2008 and August 2009. In both surveys, many people thought it was a good idea. We also had a focused month of customer comment cards. While it was in the first year, the trial year, most comments were positive. The second evaluation factor was, did the 410 system actually save money and resources? The bottom line was, and is, yes. You can see a summary of savings in the letter. Electric power savings, and there are significant overtime savings. The third review stage was, would it work for our employees? We engaged the Portland State University Executive Leadership Institute to help evaluate this, and they conducted three surveys over the one-year trial period. Results are in the letter, but the bottom line is most employees were positive about the 410 work pattern. So the bottom line is moving the 410 work pattern met our evaluation tests, and it was made permanent on November 1st, 2009. A few quick insights. Before implementation, we were concerned about the impact on our employees with children, particularly pre-kindergarten children needing child care. For the most part, employees have been able to work out child care arrangements, although some work accommodations have been necessary. For instance, a half-hour lunch to leave at 5:30 instead of 6 o'clock. I've heard up to a third of our employees on the 410 work week requested some type of accommodation. There's an adjustment period for employees moving from the 8-hour to 10-hour workdays. Clackamas County has several wellness activities for employees, and many of them use these on-site classes as a break during the day. The 410 schedule is perhaps most difficult on managers who often have business responsibilities on Fridays. And finally, many citizens have found our extended hours on Monday through Thursday to be beneficial, as they can access the county services before and after the customary 8 to 5 workday. So that's a brief summary. We thank you for the chance to appear. We're ready for questions if you have any.
Questions? Well, I will, Representative Sheehan.
I believe you had some difficulty and some growing pains with this program. Can you sort of describe, like, because I'm from Clackamas County, the issues relating to recording real estate deals or the clerk's office?
Yes. We had hoped to, one of the ways you save money is actually shutting a building down. You can dial the temperature down and electricity use and all that. So we had hoped to do that on Fridays, of course. We found out, our clerk who records property transactions, we learned that the real estate industry really desires to have those recordings done, excuse me, on Fridays. And so after a bit of hubbub and all that, we had to reopen on Fridays from 10 to 3. So we have a partial opening. So that could be alleviated if we could find a different building that's open on a regular schedule Monday through Friday to move into. We've got some operational issues that way. But you're correct. That was an unanticipated consequence. Now, Karen might have something to add on that.
I agree, because the energy savings, this is actually in a building that only has two zones, so we can only close down one of the zones. It's a four-story building, so the energy savings wasn't as much because we needed to occupy that building on Fridays.
Thank you.
Thank you. I Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any employee groups that were exempt beyond the real estate transaction group? I mean, were there any others that were exempted out of this 410s where you had other exclusions?
Employee, you mean county employees?
Yeah, any services that that have remained for the five-day work week instead of the 410?
Well, the public safety services, of course, are regular. You know, we run jails, we run the sheriff's office. All those, of course, are on around-the-clock schedules. I don't know. Did we exempt anyone else that would?
Our numbers show about half of our workforce is under the alternative work week. Actually, a little bit less than half, because we have the sheriff's department, jail, 911, all 24/7 operations. So they had to, of course, continue. We had the clerk's office. We have our elections division that started on the four-day work week and eventually went back. So little pockets, and ultimately landed up at being about half of our workforce.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. And I guess my point is that you have built into your program flexibility to kind of reassess its effectiveness and go back to the market where you need to make those changes.
In fact, it's important to remember our first year of this was really a trial period, and we labeled it that. We didn't establish it on a permanent basis until November of 2009, and we started it on November 1st, 2008.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to follow up with a previous question from Representative Matthews. Obviously, you probably have collective bargaining issues at the county that you also had to deal with as far as trying to implement this. And I mean, how was that received, and how did you work through those sorts of issues?
Well, you're correct. We do. We have several employee bargaining units. This obviously is a meet and confer issue, and we did exactly that. You might have more details, Karen, but we spent considerable time negotiating, and we reached, obviously, a successful conclusion, but it's certainly something that is subject to meet and confer process.
I would agree. We have 8 employee unions. Some, of course, in law enforcement weren't affected, but the majority of the unions were affected. We negotiated for probably a period of 2 months to get agreement on this. Certainly not all employees. You can never get 100% of employees backing this type of a concept, but the surveys clearly showed that most employees were in favor, so most employees in the bargaining unit were in favor, and I think we successfully went through those negotiations with relative ease. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's some questions on the how you develop your holiday pay. That's probably always one thing I advise other agencies as they call me and say they want to go to a compressed work schedule. Always consider how you do that. Talking with Utah, they did it a little bit differently than what we did. But ultimately, we got agreement, we got letters of agreement, and they agreed to go to the permanent schedule when the board approved that.
Specifically, was there any sort of accommodation for employees that basically said, I just don't think I can work a 10-hour day? I mean, I'm sure you must have had employees like that, and how were you able to accommodate that? Or were you?
Certainly. That's a great question. We actually developed a form, an accommodation form, where they had to submit it through their supervisor to say what their need was, and we prioritized them. We clearly said accommodations under the Americans with Disabilities Act, family medical leave take priority. We also then prioritized it for child care issues, community service, and then probably last was just a personal reason. So we made sure that people understood the priority of that. Usually the accommodations were pretty minor. They were, I want a half-hour lunch so I can get off work earlier to pick up my child. Relatively small amount were major in concept. We expected more employees to actually request telecommuting and to come in on Friday, and we found out that really we didn't have a spike in telecommuting at all. We do have some individuals. An example is an engineering inspector that's going out and inspecting public work projects, and those continue on Friday. We allow them to, maybe they didn't need to report to the building, but they could certainly go from their home to the inspection site and back and continue Friday hours. So they could maybe work 4 or 5 hours on Friday. So all of those things were considered through that type of a process.
Thank you. And so what I'm hearing is, for example, some of the concerns that, you know, I have about this, I suppose, would be thinking about older workers that just don't feel like they can physically do a 10-hour day, one. And then, you know, certainly daycare for people is always an issue. Uh-huh. And so it sounds like you had an accommodation for employees with those sorts of concerns.
In the human resource world, you always have to accommodate, and you always have to listen to the situation and see if you can come up with. What we did find was we didn't have anybody that we could identify that left employment. So we didn't lose anybody that was unhappy. Did we please everybody going to the schedule? Certainly not. There's some people that would prefer to work 5 days. If their department was moving to the 4-day work week, they had to adjust. And I think we made some successful adjustments, and we haven't really heard those types of issues lingering.
And one other thing. One thing we did learn is that in recruiting employees, it was definitely an asset to be on a 4-10 schedule. There was almost nobody, when we did some survey questions, who responded that was a detriment, but there were many people who said that would be a positive influence.
Mm-hmm. And my last little question, and then I'll give up here. is about transportation, and certainly gave us some statistics about your transportation. I'm curious about if you heard of trouble from your employees about public transportation and transit and trying to get to work. And I mean, since your schedule was now different, how did that play out in Clackamas County?
Karen may have a different answer to me. I didn't hear any concerns differing on this schedule relative to public transportation to our work sites. I did hear very positive comments for people who drive to work. It put them off the peak hours going and coming, and they noticed it was a lot faster to get to work if you have to be there at 7 instead of 8. In terms of public transit, I didn't hear much either way, but I don't know what you did.
I didn't either. I heard the same that Steve did about people are driving their own personal cars. They appreciated because it would actually ended up being a shorter commute time. Public transportation is something our offices have always struggled with because it's not exactly on some of the major MAX lines. You can just drop off at our buildings. Some people did have to make accommodations in their work schedule in order to catch a bus, leave a bus. Again, it's that usually a half-hour fluctuation in order to leave work early to catch their bus, catch their carpool, those types of flexibility that was needed.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Committee? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a resident of Clackamas County, I always assumed that this was sort of a temporary fixed to react to a budget. It looks here like this might be a permanent thing. Is this temporary or is this permanent?
It was a trial basis for the first year, November of 2008 through November of 2009, and we made it permanent after that. It could be changed someday, but I'm not hearing any desire on anybody's part to change it.
Even the citizens?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Other questions, committee members? If not, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
I'll ask Mr. Stevenson, Art Stevenson, to come up, please. Ann Wright and Mary Bonkin.
Right here, Art. Over this way.
This way?
Let me slide it out for you.
Maybe have Mary come up last.
Okay, got it.
We got it.
Microphone.
Bodkin, Mary Bodkin, please.
Put your hand.
Thank you, Mary. Art, you want to, and please welcome, you want to identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Art Stevenson. I'm the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Oregon. I'm also the vice chair of the Randolph Shepherd Vending Program here in Oregon. I do live here in Salem. As the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Oregon and vice chair of the elected committee for the Randolph Shepherd Vending Program, which is a state program that allows blind persons to run vending facilities in state, city, and county. Location of vending facility is either a cafeteria, snack bar, or vending machines. That's where our organization has a real concern. Going to a four-day work week, this will dramatically impact the businesses that are located in these state facilities. Our vendors have realized with the budget cutbacks, the furlough days, drastic downturn in their sales, and so we really have a concern that this particular measure might create an environment where blind people, the blind license managers, will no longer be able to run some of these facilities because they won't be viable. As a president of the National Federation of Blind of Oregon, I've also had some discussions with Linda Mock, who's the administrator of the Oregon Commission for the Blind, and they have a training program in Portland, and they're concerned about, you know, a four-day work week would prolong the time that blind persons would have to receive their training and go back to, you know, be able to go back to work once they've received the training and the blindness skills. So there's some concerns there. Also, you know, being a Salem resident, you know, unfortunately, Salem doesn't have public transit like Clackamas County does. In fact, the service is very poor, and so I'm also concerned about, you know, chariots being able here in Salem, where there are a lot of state locations, to be able to make the adjustments to compensate, you know, here in the city. So those are my concerns about these bills, and I understand we're in, you know, just the first step process, but you know, I think maybe a little more studying should be done before we pass a law and implement it. State government is a lot different than a city or a county government and serving the public.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stevenson, for your testimony and bringing those unforeseen consequences of this sort of legislation. Thank you very much. Mrs. Wright?
My name is Ann Wright. I'm on the board for the Business Enterprise Program and the president of Randolph Shepherd Benders of Oregon. My concerns are basically echoed by Mr. Stevenson. I run a cafeteria in the DMV headquarters. We do have cafeterias and coffee bars throughout the state agencies in Oregon, and we have a lot of employees. This would have significant fiscal impact on myself and my employees. By eliminating Fridays, you're taking 2.5 months out of the salaries of my employees, who don't make a lot of money to begin with. We've all realized the budget cuts from the last biennium, with obviously more to come. I've spoke to the state employees in my building, and honestly, half of them are in favor of it. Half of them have issues with it. If I were a state employee, I might definitely be in favor of the three-day weekend. But I have to look at it from the standpoint of myself trying to, you know, raise four teenage children and how this is going to financially impact myself and other blind people in Oregon.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mrs. Botkin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin. I'm here representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We actually represent the employees in Clackamas County, and Clackamas County's 410s was a bargaining process that we went through. Our members are very happy with the 410 arrangements that they have there, but I want to be clear that it was a bargaining process. We worked with the county to come up with a mutual arrangement that would work for us and would work for the county and would work for the citizens. And, you know, as the county has already testified, there were some growing pains. There's been a lot of give and take. I don't, quite frankly, see the need for a bill. I just talked with DAS, and neither one of us can remember a time whenever 410s has been brought to the table for bargaining at the state level. We certainly, as a union, are certainly always open to alternative work schedules where they make sense. But we represent people at the state hospital, in the prison system, and in public safety services, 911. You know, it is, you know, I sort of jokingly said, you know, we could give inmates a furlough day on Fridays, you know, send them home for the day. You know, why not give them a long weekend? We'd save a lot of money then. But, you know, the reality is those are essential services, and that is exempted in the bill. But I think that the reality is that this is a matter of for collective bargaining. There is no limitation on what the state can bring forward at the bargaining table any more than there is on our part. You can talk about anything. And if the state thinks that this is a good idea, our union would be certainly be willing to have that discussion in the appropriate area. And, you know, putting a bill in sort of codifies a practice that eliminates the flexibility you may need to make the practice work. And we'd be much more interested in having sort of a more traditional way of dealing with this and saying, you know, we want to look at 410s, we want to look at it as a way to save money, and do the sort of homework that Clackamas County did to get prepared for it and make sure that it actually does save money and that it works and that it continues to provide the services that citizens require and that it doesn't negatively impact our partners. You know, if there's some way to make sure that folks like the Blind Commission have some input as well, you know, I think that that is an important process, and we need to look at who gets impacted by it, how they're impacted, and what we need to do to make it work. And so with that, you know, we're sort of somewhere between neutral and opposed, but, you know, more neutral than opposed, because we do like the idea of 410s where they make sense.
Thank you.
And we've done it.
Thank you. Committee members, questions?
Representative Quinn.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Art in particular for coming down. We have been through a few issues before he and I together, and you know, I don't think the sponsors of this bill, frankly, thought about the impact there. That's why these public hearings are so valuable. But I would encourage, if we're going to take a look at amendments and things, some sort of program that we could work out that might help because, you know, we kicked the blind in the face a bunch of times last session and closed their school, and I don't want to do it again this session. Not to bring up a sore subject, but no interest in more punishment to the blind this session, if we could.
Thank you. Other committee members? Representative Matthews.
I'm just curious, and thanks for your testimony, all three of you. Mr. Stevenson, in particular on the vending machines, this doesn't eliminate hours. It actually extends the hours for the 4 days, but you're still seeing that fifth day of the building closed, that this would impact your sales significantly. Is that correct?
Representative, I do. With budget cuts and sales have gone down dramatically, and I think people don't necessarily eat more in a 10-hour day, but I think all the nuances that have been happening, that our sales are going to go down, and if you eliminate a whole day of sales, it could drastically, you know, affect us.
Thank you, Paul, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Yes.
And I was just thinking, and I appreciate you bringing forward the unintended consequence and making it known early so that we have a chance to think through this. Personally, my wife and I own and operate a daycare in Gresham, and our hours are 6 o'clock to 6:30. You know, if somebody's working till 6 o'clock in the evening, it's going to be difficult for them to make it by 6:30 to pick up their child. But those are all the things that could happen in businesses that could be impacted in some way or another. It does take flexibility, but Ms. Brocken, I really appreciate your comment because I do think collective bargaining cures a lot of this as Clackamas County proof. Thank you.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I was in another committee testifying, and I just wanted to know if this applied to legislators, if we get to only work 4 days, 10 hours a day, and we're in session.
We're going to vote for it, right?
I asked, but you want to get a bill, you and I?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Other questions, committee members?
Can we include lobbyists, too?
Representative Hovey. Chair Hovey.
Thank you, and I will note that Representative Cameron did miss the answer to that question.
Okay.
And it was no.
Sorry.
All right. But certainly you're able to get an amendment at some point. But Ms. Bakken, I also appreciate the issue about collective bargaining. I recognize that that is definitely part of the process, and would have to be to make this sort of thing work. It would have to be agreed upon, no doubt. But I'm not so sure that it. I'm not sure I agree with your comments totally about you don't need a bill to do this. As the legislature, we may decide that this would be good policy for the state, and you know, maybe DAS and the governor's office, you know, aren't going down that road, and the legislature may want to, and therefore we would need a bill actually to say we want to set this kind of policy to look at it, and rest assured that we are thinking about studying this and having a lot of conversations to try to mitigate negative impacts if we were to move forward with this, and I certainly would be involving the unions for sure.
Thank you.
Committee members, anything else? Okay, thank you, citizens. Thanks for coming to give us your testimony. Committee members, Diane Foster with DAS is in the audience and available for questions. If committee members have any questions of DAS.
I just
Just wondering.
Mrs. Foster, would you please come up then? Thank you. And for the record, please identify yourself.
Certainly. Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Diana Foster. I am the Administrator of Human Resource Services Division for the Department of Administrative Services.
Chair Hovey, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming up. And I was just curious if DAS or the State of Oregon has entertained this notion before or has looked at it in terms of trying to decide whether it was a good idea or not, or whether it had any potential for cost savings.
Co-Chair Holvey, we have been looking and watching Utah. I would say other than, and Clackamas County is our most recent, I just pulled out my business card to hopefully have a conversation with Karen as well. Really not seriously as far as 410 work week. When we addressed the furlough situation, that was really an opportunity for us to look at essential services, how to deal with institutions, 24/7 operations, to be able to look across the state as far as employees and services and how to find that balance. And I would say that's the best example of looking at a reduced or alternative work week.
And one more, and my last question, being that DAS is part of the executive branch of government, could the governor's office and the executive branch implement something like this through the collective bargaining agreement and just say, we're going to 410s without any sort of legislative interaction?
Co-Chair Holvey, it's certainly part of the collective bargaining process. I totally agree with Mary Bodkin and her comments earlier. Absolutely. That's the process to really engage with our partners, our employees, make sure that we understand the implications to them as well. Unknown consequences, very good comments from blind services that we do provide as well through vending services and cafeterias. So absolutely, that's the environment we'd like to take it forward. As a part of that process.
Thank you.
Representative Cameron?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry I was out of the room. So would this apply, so for example, maybe I can get this question answered offline. The DMV, from what I understand, does not get general fund money, correct? They get their money from, they're flowing in money from license plate fees and all that other stuff. So, and I didn't quite understand during the government shutdown why we shut down both DMVs here in the state, in the city of Salem, when we could have kept one open one day and one another day to serve people. So would this apply across the board to even departments such as Department of Motor Vehicles that have different resources and funding for their budget?
Co-chairs and Representative Cameron, the way the bill is written, and I understand there's conversations about amendments, essential services, there are allowances and criteria that we develop as a part of the plan that would either exempt operations or some kind of trade-off. I think that would be the prudent way to approach any kind of a plan in order to implement successfully.
So there are provisions in the bill that would allow state government to keep certain services open 5 days a week that the public is expecting to get services from, or keep them open on Saturday, and I mean that flexibility as they have now.
Co-chairs, Representative Cameron, as I read the bill, it does give us that discretion.
Thank you.
No other questions, Mrs. Foster. I haven't talked to Representative Hovey or Representative Thatcher about this bill, but I know at the federal government, they have a work, you work 4 days a week at 10 hours, but the agency's open every day. In other words, they have an A team or B team, and you work, you know, Monday through Thursday, and another one works Tuesday through Friday or something like that. Has that ever been discussed? I know that savings is when you can close down a building. I understand that, but that's another option that I guess some organizations, I know it is in the federal government, does that.
Chair, was that I certainly would recommend that that's an option that we look at as well. You are correct as far as closing down the building, the energy savings you're not going to realize as much, but that's an option, certainly.
Thank you. So I think it's good testimony, committee members. There's no other one signed up, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2932. Okay, committee members, we've been flipping around. We have three bills that we'd like to pass out. If you look at your schedules on the back of that page, so I'm going to open. Let me get my script. This one here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2425. There's already been a dash one adopted, and the minimum physical impact. There's no revenue impact. What does this mean? Not. Okay. No. So we're ready to.
Yeah.
Good
point.
Yeah. 2425. Do you want to do a summary of it first? Jen, will you give us a.
Mr. Chairs and committee members, House Bill 2425, the committee had a hearing February 24th. It's a major to modify provisions relating to local budget law, and we heard from a number of the work group that put the bill together. At that hearing, the committee adopted the Dash 1 amendment. There is no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued.
And there is no subsequent?
There is no subsequent referral on this bill.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2425 as amended to the floor with a due pass and recommendation.
Representative Hovey moves House Bill 2425 as amended to the floor of a due pass recommendation. Committee members, any questions? No questions? Tamara, would you please do a roll call?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative
Clemmer.
Aye.
Representative
Matthews.
Aye.
Vice
Chair Sheehan. Yes. Vice Chair Smith. Excused. Richard Holby.
Aye.
Richard
Wilson.
Aye. Okay, the motion carries. Anyone want to volunteer to carry this bill, please?
Representative Matthews, right? Oh, I just volunteered, didn't I, by saying that?
Sorry.
I'd like to, yeah.
Representative Clem will be the carrier. Okay, with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2425. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2246. Jan, please bring us up to date.
Mr. Chairs and committee members, House Bill 2246, the committee heard this February 10th and on March 1st. It extends a confidentiality to any person making a call to the government waste hotline. It allows a person making a report of state waste inefficiency or abuse to waive their confidentiality. It allows the Secretary of State to forward an allegation to another public body unless the person making the report objects. It provides that the investigation and any determinations made are confidential until the investigation is complete. It allows the Secretary to disclose a brief summary when allegations are unfounded. It allows the governments and service districts to establish hotlines with similar processes for investigating and disclosure of reports on local waste, inefficiency, and abuse. On March 1st, the committee adopted the Dash 1 amendment, which provides that all the documents, the information, and other records following the completion of an investigation or a determination not to investigate beyond an initial investigation are disclosable public records except for the identity of the reporter. It also removed provisions allowing the Secretary, when an investigation is determined allegations to be unfounded, to disclose a brief summary of the allegations and determination.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2246 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Hovey moves House Bill 2246 as amended to the floor of a due pass recommendation. Tamara, please do a roll call. No questions.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Clown?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Excused.
Chair Holby?
Aye.
Chair Wisdom?
Aye. and Representative Sheehan offered to be the carrier of that bill. So with that, I'll close the work session. It passes, and I close the work session on House Bill 2246. Open a work session on House Bill 2248.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2248 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Jan, give us a quick summary, please.
Sure, chairs and committee members. House Bill 2248, the committee heard it on March 1st. It removes the requirement for the Secretary of State to audit the governor-elect's expenses incurred prior to taking office. It removes the requirement of the Secretary of State to audit claims against the War Veterans Bond Sinking Account, and it removes the requirement for the Secretary of State to annually audit the expenses of the Department of Aviation. There were no committee amendments. There's no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued.
Thank you. Committee members, questions?
Yes.
Representative.
Just one. I'm trying to read it real quick. So this only applies to taxpayer-funded expenses, I assume, not like the current governor, when he was governor-elect, he raised it privately.
Thank you. Mr. Blackmer, will you please come up and answer this question? For the record, please, Mr. Blackmer.
For the record, I'm Gary Blackmer, the Director of Audits in the Secretary of State's Audits Division. This statute, as it's written, refers to expenses that the governor would be reimbursed for conducting state business. So it's not campaign expenditures. It's around what has happened since that statute was written is there are transition budgets that are provided to governors-elect in order to pay for their expenses. And we believe that that was originally written before those provisions were made, and it's no longer something that is mandated so much as we still have the ability to audit those expenses should they occur.
And then the elections division would already have the ability to, and does review any campaign funds used for transition expenses for, you know, appropriateness, and it all adds up, and the receipts match, and all that stuff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, yes, the elections division would be responsible for reviewing campaign expenditures by the governor-elect.
Okay. You okay, Representative Clem?
Yeah, I just want to just to the bill for a moment, if I may. I just want to make sure we weren't, you know, minimizing the necessary checks and balances on these things. And I feel pretty comfortable about it.
Okay, thank you. There's no other questions from the committee. Thank you, Mr. Blackmer. And we'll ask for a roll call vote, please. Cameron.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Excused.
Chair Holby?
Aye.
Chair Wisnett?
Aye. And I'll carry that. I'll do my duty. Okay? So with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2248. And with that, committee members, we'll adjourn the meeting.
No kidding.
Good job.